Hey, gang, I want to tell you about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products. They are fantastic. I've been using them now for a couple of months. I've used their balms. I've used their oils to sleep. And today, I'll be talking about a whole new product. Now, listen, True Hemp Science promises you premium quality, pure ingredients, and true value. They source the highest grade organic hemp from around the world to handcraft the finest full spectrum CBD products. They offer a complete line of CBD products, including full spectrum CBD oils, tinctures, CBD skincare lotions, CBD sports rubs, CBD gummies, and CBD gluten-free chocolates. They number their CBD products to differentiate them by strain, by farm, and by extraction method. Now, last week I was telling you about the number 81, which is great for relaxation and sleep. But today I'm going to be talking to you about number G41. That's full spectrum CBG plus CBDA plus terpenes. Now, this has given me some focus. It has some CBD in it, but it doesn't make you sleepy or tired or foggy in any way. The CBG kind of gives you some focus and it energizes your brain while keeping you calm and cool. You know what I'm saying? People report it relaxes their brain and does not affect cognitive performance. While it is calming, it is less physically so than CBD. It's great for working. It's great for getting your work done. I'm even using it right now. So, gang, how did I get here as partnered with True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD products? And if you use the code HDIGH, you will get something special. Purchase $65 worth of regular price products and receive 296 milligrams of number 81 distillate. That's the one I was telling you about. That's great for rest, relaxation, and sleep. Just go to truehempscience.com/HDIGH. For how did I get here? And you can also visit them at their brick and mortar store. That's right. They have a physical location right here in Austin at 505 West Mary Street, Unit C, Austin, Texas. Don't forget, use the code HDIGH. If you're already using CBD products, switch over to this one. I promise it's going to be great. You're going to love it. All these products are great. And the CBG, CBDA is unbelievable. Like I'm telling you, I feel very clear. I feel very focused. I haven't been drinking a bunch of coffee all day, and I'm not all anxious from coffee. You know what I'm saying? TrueHempScience.com, HDIGH. You're not only getting yourself some CBD, but you're helping us out here, right? By using the code HDIGH. TrueHempScience.com. Go get your full spectrum CBD products today. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself,
how did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Bobby.
When we talked.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week. Man, it's been a gorgeous week here in Austin, I'll tell you. It last couple weeks, it really like lifts my spirits. It really, every day is a little easier to get through when it's a beautiful day with low humidity and non-oppressive heat, but lots of sunshine and running around outside with Rosie. Great times. Hey gang, speaking of outside, Skyrocket will be playing outside tonight, Friday, April 1st. Happy April Fool's Day, by the way. Friday, April 1st, we'll be playing at Alamo Heights Night in San Antonio. Get on, check it out. You can find it, Alamo Heights Night. We're going to be alternating sets with the band, so we'll be playing like at 7 tonight and then also like at 9:30. So come on out and check it out. Always a good time. We did it like in 2019, and there was like 5 or 6,000 people there. It was pretty fucking off the hook, and it was a lot of fun. And heading to Houston tomorrow to play a private show. So Skyrocket's back to work, which is great. Our Omicron downtime has been lifted, and we're back to work. Gang, I have a great show for you today. The immensely talented singer-songwriter Carrie Rodriguez is my guest on the show today. Now, I've been wanting to get Carrie on for years, and I ran into her at Joanna Fest a couple of months ago, and we ended up talking. I invited her on the show. And anyway, she was like, hey, I'm going to be in New York for a while, so maybe we'll have to do it over Zoom. So I said, okay. And I found out why she was in New York, because she wrote all the songs for a musical that's premiering off-Broadway called Americano, the musical. It's the story of Tony Valdovinos, who's a dreamer who grew up after 9/11 wanting to defend America and join the Marines. He tried to join the Marines, but he found out that he was undocumented. So the story then, he goes out and does everything he can to ensure that people of color and Latino heritage are able to vote that can. Okay. Also, a lot of other things. It's a whole beautiful musical, and she wrote all the songs for it. And it is going to be premiering at, or it is on the New World Stages Theater in New York City, running March 31st through June 19th, with actual opening night on April 21st. So anyway, I went and listened to that record, which you can find on Spotify, Americano the Musical. And you can find out more about it at AmericanoTheMusical.com. But I went there and listened to the songs. It's absolutely gorgeous, man. It's beautiful. And if you live in New York, you might want to get out there and check it out. Anyway, as I said, Carrie Rodriguez, incredibly talented, incredibly prolific. Her last album, Lola, was one of NPR's 50 albums of the year. She's been doing music for Brené Brown's podcast, Unlocking Us, music that she makes with Gina Chavez, who I also love. She's got a video series, an interview series and musical series that she does in conjunction with Texas Monthly called From Texas with Love. And she's done one season already featuring Jimmy Dale Gilmore, Ruthie Foster, David Ramirez, Emily Gimble, David Polkingham, and she's about to start season two. It's beautiful. Like, they go out in the country and they sit down and they play music and they talk, and it's just a beautiful show. So go out, get out there and check that out if you haven't seen it, From Texas with Love. Anyway, she's doing a lot of stuff, including her concert series, Laboratorio, where she gets in and collaborates with other Latino artists, is resuming after a long time down from COVID. They're doing it at the Stateside Theater now, at the Paramount, which is super awesome. May 22nd will be the next one with Gabby Moreno and Oscar Casares. Carrie and I have a great conversation. So she's up in New York for the opening of that. She's going to come down and do some shows and stuff. She's going to do that Laboratorio show in May 22nd. But I had a great time, great time talking to Carrie and getting to know her. You can find her at CarrieRodriguez.com. And without further ado, folks, here is my conversation with the immensely talented and incredibly cool Carrie Rodriguez. Let's get down. So what are you like? Are you like an Airbnb or like in a hotel or something like that?
I'm in a hotel. It's like in Times Square area.
Man, Skyrocket played a gig up there a few years ago, and the people that hired us thought they since we were from Texas, we would love to stay in Times Square. And we we stayed in the hotel above the Olive Garden there in Times Square, and it was pretty
that's actually even worse than where I am.
It was really brutal. Yeah. So, man, I didn't know anything at all about this musical. Like, at all, until you sent me the thing. And it's an amazing story. And all of this, you wrote all of this music?
I did.
What a great job. Like, what a beautiful record.
Well, I mean, we'll see. It's all so new to me. I have no experience in the musical theater world. I've barely ever seen a musical. When they offered me this gig, it was about 5 years ago now, and I just got a random phone call from my manager saying, hey, these people contacted me about a musical. I'm like, what? But when she told me the story, which is that the musical is a true story. It's based on this young man named Tony Valdovinos, who was born in Mexico. His parents brought him over to the U.S. when he was two. They didn't tell him. So he grew up thinking he was an American citizen.
Right.
His dream was to become a Marine. He was so patriotic. he was a kid during when 9/11 happened, and that just like shifted his whole thinking. And his goal was to be a Marine and fight for his country, and he had no idea that he couldn't do that. So when he's 18, he goes to the recruiter to sign up. They start asking him for his social, and he realizes something is strange. He goes home, confronts his parents, and at 18, they tell him that actually he was born in Mexico and he's not a citizen. So his life is just shattered. And when the producer called me and told me this part, this, you know, so much, I'm just already like hooked. How could I say no to this? The second act of the musical is all about what he does once he gets over the shock, which is the young guy manages to basically contribute to his country, enter into politics without being documented. He starts his own like political canvassing company that helps Latinos get elected, people who are helping immigrant causes in Arizona. And he really has changed the face of politics in Arizona. All this without, you know, documentation and not knowing, you know, when he might have to leave the only country that he knows. And his family, too. I mean, his parents still haven't gotten that sorted out. He's a very brave, inspiring man. And I could not say no to the opportunity.
Wait, so still to this day, he might be deported at any moment?
Yes, because this country has not figured out how to move forward. And there's no permanent solution for dreamers.
There's not. And there seems to be a thing, like I have family members that are very Trumpy and Fox Newsy and stuff. And every once in a while, they'll be like, they'll just call me because of what I represent to them. Like, you know what I mean? Like confrontationally, they'll call like, so what do you think? And I started thinking about this thing with the way that we handle the immigration here in the United States seems to be the same way that we did this war on drugs, is that we set up this thing that we'll never solve on purpose because it's too powerful as a tool to get people elected and to get things to move by being able to scare the shit out of people and say, these guys are coming over and they're taking your stuff and they're your kids and your, you know, everything that keeps these people up at night, American people that buy into this shit. It seems like it's almost a racket on our side.
Yeah. Yes.
And we're dealing with people's lives.
We are. And I think, I mean, that's my hope with this musical is that we can show just the humanity in Tony and his family. Like, I want the people that watch Fox News to come see this show. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, we're just showing Tony as, look at this, like, hardworking, ambitious kid who wants to give back to his country, which is the United States.
Right.
Look at this model citizen and look how he interacts with his family and what his values are. And can't we all just relate to him? I think that any grandfather who comes into this show is going to see Tony and like, oh man, yeah. Like, I wish that was my grandkid. You know, I mean, he's an upstanding American citizen is what he is. And I hope that you know, we're trying to just tell a human story. And of course, I think music is really the easiest way to like push away barriers that people have put up and hopefully like get straight to the emotional core of the story and of hopefully something that might make a shift in the way people think.
Right. Before we go too far, we're finally dancing is like a, almost like a standard. What a classic sound. I mean, all those songs are great, but I heard that one and I was like, did she write this song? Like this is like, it's like almost from another time. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. I didn't mean it bad. Like, did she write this song? Like, I didn't think you could, but I was just like, it just kind of seems like, wow. Like, seems like something you'd hear in like, you know, played by a band, even instrumentally or something, or sung by some kind of lady in a fancy dress.
Yeah. And that is the idea too. I mean, that song comes at a moment in the play where Tommy has just all of a sudden kissed his best friend that he's been best friends with the girl since he was five. And she's a real tomboy. And all of it, like, they're at a high school dance and all of a sudden they kissed and he realizes, oh my God, I'm like totally hot for my best friend. I didn't know it. We're finally dancing. And it's so sweet and tender. And of course, you know, like, everything spotlight goes just to them. And there they are, like, awkwardly slow dancing and singing that song to each other. It's really sweet.
Wow. So what do you do in there? Like, what do you have to do every day? Like, well, when I watched some of the news clips and I was looking for you, like, in the background and stuff.
Like, what are you doing in there?
Like, are you, yeah, like, are you there? Like, hey man, like, that's the wrong note on the thing.
Yes. You know, what I'm doing, especially right now, we're in a process called tech, which is a type of rehearsal that is very tedious.
Okay.
I'm learning a lot. I mean, the amount of detail that goes into mounting a show like this is extreme. I mean, I'm in a rehearsal period right now where basically, like, every second of the show has to be looked at, and then the lighting is like programming, okay, in this moment, this person's standing here, this person's so lighting and sound design, because the sound engineers are over there having to program who's singing at what time. And this is a cast of, I think, 17 or 18 people. So it's outrageous.
Wow.
So it's a very slow process, but as it's going by, I'm hearing them sing these songs, and I'm just, when there's a moment where everyone's standing there waiting on lighting to enter in their stuff, I go up and say, you know, can we, for example, these actors are so talented and they're so trained. Like, they've studied singing and acting
whole
lives.
Yeah, yeah.
I have not. And all I know is that, you know, the songs I wrote, I think probably sound best when they're sung in more of a colloquial way. I mean, they're kind of folk songs because I'm a folk songwriter.
Right.
And I, you know, I'm just going my instinct. Like, I feel like the formality of musical theater is, you know, not necessarily working that well with, like, my song. So I will go up and ask, can you, you know, adjust the way you're pronouncing this word so it sounds like you actually talk.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Or also just hearing a song sung by, you know, that many people, sometimes you realize there's something that doesn't work and I have to go back and change a line or change how many people are singing a line.
Right.
You know?
There's also, like, yeah, a weird sort of, they have their way of executing music. I know what you mean, because, like, I can't stand when rock and roll is on Broadway, because it, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, pour some sugar on me. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. It is. It really is. And I'm trying to approach this with, like, a really open mind. I don't know anything about musical theater.
Right,
and
right,
I don't
right.
want to come in here, you know, I'm right. super green and I don't right. know anything, but I think I know everything and my song should be this way. But yeah, I'm also thinking a lot about my training as a classical violinist. So I grew up, you know, playing the classical violin. I started lessons when I was five with an amazing teacher in Austin, Bill Dick, who is still part of our family and my teacher and now teaching my son, actually.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I'm digressing. So I do think about, I try to put myself in the mindset of being like 18 years old and going to conservatory, and I do remember as a classical violinist how hard it was to be thrown into a situation where I had to, you know, like, improvise and
right, right.
play along with the folk song. I would go out and tour with my father, David Rodriguez, who wrote very, you know, political kind of folk songs, very folky. And often he would have to tell me note for note what to play. And it was still uncomfortable. And I've seen old recordings of myself. You know, I'm using all this vibrato, and I think it's very much like these actors, that's what they've been trained to do. So, I'm trying to respect all of that training and all of that, like, life's work that they've put into it. But I also do think that our musical is going to be different. And the more different it is, I think the better.
Yeah.
It just comes from a different place. And the creative team is not your, you know, I mean, not your regular musical theater creative team.
Right, right.
Yeah, our arranger is super not, he is, his name's Sergio Mendoza. Uh-huh. And he is very rock and roll. Like, he's a member of Calexico. He just co-produced right. their newest record. He, his own band, Orquesta Mendoza, plays like indie, mambo, cumbia, rockin' stuff. They tour all over the world. So it's great because he's also an outsider like me.
Yeah. How, are you feeling more comfortable? How long do you have to be there? Like, it opens, the official opening is the 21st of April, but there's pre-show, like soft yeah. opening or something?
They call it previews.
Previews.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I think the first one is in a week. I'm basically here right now for about 3 weeks. So I'm here throughout this really slow tech rehearsal process. And then when previews start, I'll be seeing the show probably every night. I will get so tired of it, I know. But the idea is that I'm trying to, you know, figure out what needs to be changed. And then there'll come a day where we have to freeze the show. I think that's April 14th, and we can't make any more changes. And it opens the 21st, and then I'm just flying in for the opening night and then home. And it'll run until the end of June.
Yeah.
If all goes well.
Yeah.
Or longer.
Yeah.
Or it'll close quickly. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows what happens with that stuff. But what an exciting yeah. adventure to be on.
It is.
Are you...
It is, and I feel extremely grateful
yeah.
just to have a hand in telling Tony's story and to have, we are so supported. I mean, we have this nonprofit who is supporting, and we have a lot of investors.
I'm sure.
Who have contributed and made all this possible. But our number one investor is a nonprofit called Chicanos por la Causa. And they are the coolest. They started with the civil rights movement, you know, in the 60s.
Yeah.
They're from Arizona. And their mission is just to raise up Latinos, help them in, you know, so many different areas, education, housing, you know, like city projects. They are amazing. And so they are like our biggest investor.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. When did your family come? Like, they came from Mexico?
No, on my grandfather's side, yes. I don't even know my family history that well, but I think so. On my father's side, his father, I believe, came from Mexico when he was a kid.
So you're second generation?
But I couldn't even be wrong about that. It could have been my grandfather's father.
Right.
Not sure. But
right.
I know they came from like maybe Monterrey. My grandmother's side, on my father's side, she actually is definitely third or fourth generation Tejana.
Okay.
So her family, actually, they were some of the immigrants that were brought from the Canary Islands to San Antonio.
Oh, wow.
Heard about this?
No, I've never heard that.
It's really interesting. They brought kind of a group of families. They were just trying to get people in Texas. I mean, of course, this is before it was Texas, right? And this is before, I guess, Mexico had its independence, because this was a Spanish, you know, colony, bringing people over from the Canary Islands to try to settle in San Antonio and just have bodies there to help, hopefully, you know, keep their mission and safe from, you know, the Native Americans who actually had been there for
right, right.
thousands of years. So, yeah, it's really interesting. But I think we have quite a bit of that Canary Island heritage. And I'm curious to learn more. I have one of those 23andMe
oh, you
things
do?
Sitting on my desk.
Right, right, right.
I haven't done it yet. I need to send it off.
I'm scared because I really want to be Jewish. And I feel like there is a thing there where it's not going to be on my mom's side, but it'll be on my dad's side, so I won't officially be Jewish. But I think I am.
Are you talking about the Latinos, like the?
No, there's in my family, like both of my parents were born in Cuba, and then they came like in 1959, 60 when Castro took over.
Uh-huh.
And but my, like my dad's mom came from England. She was born in England, and they fled around the time of Hitler starting to break out of Germany and start making his move around Europe. And they left and went to Cuba. And the story is that she was in an abusive relationship with this guy. My great grandmother was in an abusive relationship with this guy and fled to Cuba. But there's like this thing that like also Jewish people were scared in Europe and like splitting and like going other places. And so there might be that thing.
Interesting.
Isn't it? It's weird.
Wow. So that side of your family came from England to Cuba?
Just my grandma.
Just your grandma.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what about the rest of your family? Like where are their roots?
All of my other three grandparents were born in Cuba, but it all goes like Spain, Italy, Scotland. It's mm-hmm. weird. Yeah. Let me ask you this. When you got the violin when you were five, did you ask for it or was it given to you?
I asked for it.
Okay. What'd you see that made you go like, I want to do it?
I was very fortunate to be in a public elementary school in Austin that had a Suzuki program for kindergarten students.
Oh, cool.
And it was started by my teacher, Bill Dick. It was a pilot program. I think it lasted for just a year or two, you know, until he lost funding for it. But he came in once a week and gave Suzuki lessons. And I remember it was during nap time. And I was not good at nap time. Like, I talked the whole time. I had already had a parent-teacher conference pretty early on in the year because I wouldn't stop talking. And I remember getting up to go to the bathroom during nap time, like walking down the hallway and hearing these squawking little violins, which, you know, those violins for five-year-olds sound terrible, playing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Right, right.
And I can't imagine what drew me to that sound. I really can't. But I came home and just begged my mother to get me a violin and to let me start these violin lessons. I don't think I was just trying to get out of nap time. I think I genuinely was just fascinated by it. And then so I started kind of later into the year, maybe halfway through, and immediately it was like fish in water. I don't know. It came very easily to me and I loved it. I, for the most part, didn't complain about practicing, you know.
Right.
I remember one kind of early on, there was a moment or two where I decided I didn't want to practice every day. And my mom said, okay, well, I'll just take your violin back to straight music then. I'm going to put it up in the closet. And no big deal. And like a day later, I'm crying. And, you know, I want my violin. So I just was very self-driven.
Yeah.
I mean, she was definitely not ever like pushing me to do any. I just, you know what she did also? She took me to see Itzhak Perlman.
Okay.
Around that time, right after I had started. He played with the Austin Symphony. And we had like nosebleed seats in the back of the theater. But I remember we spotted two right on the front row and during intermission that were empty. And during intermission, we ran down and like snagged these seats right on the front row. And I was so mesmerized. I still remember the concert. And I remember thinking to myself, I want to be like him when I grow up. I want to play the violin. Like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then he was at the end of the show, he was doing an encore and it was a solo piece like Paganini Caprice or something. And it got so exciting, you know, in the middle of it, I actually like stood up and started clapping in the middle of his piece, a moment where you shouldn't do that. But I was five and I'm sure it was cute, you know. And my mom claims, this is very dramatic, but she said he looked down at me and like gave me the biggest smile.
Oh,
so I was like blessed from that moment forward.
Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. It's like seeing like Yoda or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a little kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's good to even tell the story to remind myself how important it is to try to give your kids the opportunities to see art at a young age. Like, it's just so crucial, yeah. You know? And here, I've never taken my kid to see the symphony, so that's going to go on the list, actually.
I'm sure you have the same, some of the same friends that I have that play with the symphony that you go, you, I mean, I've gone into, like, they'll put you on the list, man. There's not a lot of people that go to the symphony. It's actually pretty sad. Like, when you go, you're like, shit, this is a real drag. Like, this is, like, half full. People are really old there. And you're like, this is the audience, like, 80% of the people are 80 years old or older. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to work on that. Well,
it's a tough, it's weird, isn't it? It's a weird thing. And you know, what I'm noticing it now is, like, with rock and roll. Like, I've been this rock and roll guy for a long time. And over the last 10 years, there's like a, hey, man, so if you're going to come in here with like this rock and roll thing, like, we're doing a different thing nowadays. And you're like, wait, what? Is it like being a jazz guy or something? You know what I mean? Like, wait, no, we do this everywhere. Everybody loves what we do. Like, not anymore, man. We're doing other stuff too. Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm kind of fascinated by the whole musical theater world. I see a lot of young kids into musical theater, and I wonder what it is that's drawing them to that, you know, particular genre.
Mamma
like,
Mia?
How do we spread that out? What's that?
Mamma Mia?
Mamma Mia?
I don't know.
It's really interesting. Like, there's young teens that are super into musical theater, you know, going to these shows with their parents. I don't know, because they definitely don't go to my shows, like...
Right, right.
My audience.
Right.
They're also aging out. I mean, they're, you know, they're very
No, I know.
Old.
I know exactly what you mean. It happens to me.
Yeah.
It happens whenever I go or I play those Wednesday night Sun radio things at Wero's. Like,
yeah.
The people that recognize me when I go places as like, dude, that's Johnny. They're old.
Their white hair's
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
White hair ponytails.
Yeah,
I know.
And they're still stoned. They still reek of weed.
God bless them. They're still here in
that's,
Austin. So
that's
grateful.
Funny. I was thinking that about you because I know that you got to be at least like 10 or 15 years younger than me, right? Aren't you? I'm like 53.
Got it. Oh, well, okay. I'm 43.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
I just,
you look so young.
Thanks. So do you, by the way. That's why I figured, I don't know, she's in her 30s. I don't know. The very first time I ever heard of you, I think, was when you were doing stuff with Chip Taylor. That's the first time I ever saw you, first time I heard of you. And I don't, are you, have you done Wolfsonian things? Have you done stuff with Todd Wolfson? Are you friends with Todd Wolfson?
I am friends with Todd.
Okay, I think that's...
He shot... early on photos of us.
Okay.
Like an album.
I think that's when I came to know you because we're pretty good friends and he, you know, we talk about what we're doing and he'll be like, oh, you should check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He shot promo photos for us very early on, I think, for one of the album cycles. Yeah. Yeah. I've been thinking about Chip a lot. I need to give him a call because I'm in New York City now for a few weeks.
Is he there?
Yeah, he's up here. I don't know. I think he has been living out in Westchester. That's where his wife is. And he used to kind of come back and forth between there and the city, but I don't even know right now if I need to find out.
Right.
If he's still keeping his apartment here.
So what I was...
Yeah, he's a real New Yorker.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that you're going back to the age thing is that you play older than yourself, like not like you pretend to be, but you play older than yourself. Like you went to school and you went to, did you graduate from Berkeley?
I did.
Yeah. And it seems like you can go and learn all of this stuff there. And then what you've kind of turned that into is like this collaborative, it seems like in the moment and stuff, like watching the, From Texas with Love, like the one with Jimmy, which was great, by the way, you're really great on that. And you have a great, like, You remember when they used to have like spokesperson? Remember when that was like a thing? Like you,
yeah.
It was like a category in like Star Search. You're really good at that. Like that,
totally.
That is a skill. Like once someone like offers it to you and you try to do it, you realize it's actually not a bullshit. It's like a real hard thing to do. And you have a very calm vibe and a nice delivery and a pleasant face. You don't look like you're going to start screaming at any, you know what I mean? Like
it's challenging. I don't feel like I'm great at it, but I think every time I do it, I get a little bit better.
Right.
And it is all about like making the person you're with feel comfortable and reading their vibe
right.
and trying to and get the best out of them.
In my mind, you and Jimmy, I'm sure went over stuff a couple of times, but in like my fantasy mind, this was all just like happening in the moment. And just really like your connection to your instrument is very beautiful. It's like watching Prince play guitar. Like you're very, you can tell you've been holding that thing since you were five,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And it just seems like there's a real, like what you've become musically is a person that's in constant spirit of collaboration. Is that so?
I love that sentence. I need to just write that down and
thanks.
Put it up on the wall. That's true. That
luckily we recorded it. Oh shit. No, I'm just joking.
You do that to everybody when you do these.
No, but your reaction, your face was very real. You were like, dude, no.
I haven't eaten breakfast yet, Johnny. Like, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good for another bit, but I'm thinking how long can I go?
Thank
yes.
you.
Well, oh, yes. Collaboration, it brings me more joy than any other aspect of music. It really yeah. does. And it's always been that way. I don't know if it goes back to like playing in an orchestra, that kind of collaboration maybe,
right.
or I don't know. And certainly working with Chip, I mean, what an unusual collaboration, but it really was a true collaboration.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he was so much older and had a lifetime of experience in a totally different world. I mean, guy wrote Wild Thing and Angel of the Morning.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was so young and green, but I know there was something like, I definitely brought this whole, like at the time I was really into bluegrass music. That's like, I was just really wanted to play like those fiddle players. I was, you know, trying to get away from my classical
right.
training and like learn how to groove and play like,
right.
you know, Stuart Duncan or Alison Krauss. Like I just really looked Johnny Gimbel. I would
right.
imitate them and like copy their records. And so that's what I was kind of coming into that relationship with was like, oh, well, okay, you write these like folk songs that have these, you know, incredible, like anthemic though, hooks and lines, and then I'm like making them sort of bluegrassy, folky, and adding my voice. I had never sung before. I mean, I had no desire to sing. That was not part of my plan.
Wow.
So I think the combination, it was a special collaboration.
Yeah, yeah.
Neither one of us would have ever made music like that if we hadn't, you know, have met during that time.
Yeah. So, oh, that record that you sent me the link to, Lola, then I started going through your stuff. That record's great, man. Yeah, what a beautiful
you.
Album. Who produced that?
Lee Townsend.
Who's that?
He is, he's like family at this point. He's also my manager. He and his wife, Phyllis Oyama, are a married couple that works together. And he is a world-class producer. He's produced almost every record Bill Frisell has ever made.
Wow.
And they're also Bill's management as well.
Wow.
So, he's one of these old school producers who he doesn't even really play an instrument. He's just got ears for miles and like vast knowledge of music.
Right.
He's just been, you know, fanatically listening to music his whole life. He worked in the 80s, I think, for ECM in New York as an A&R guy. Like, he's done a lot of different things, but he's also produced records with some of the greatest jazz musicians in the world, you know, with Bill. And he is, in addition to that, he is a psychologist. So, like, certified, like, he does that too.
Yeah. Oh, he practices?
Which makes some- yes, yes.
Yes, I was going to say, that's probably what makes him the world's greatest producer.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's funny. He kind of started school for that, but then, you know, gotten sidetracked with music and then been a producer for 30 years or whatever. And he went back to school to finish his degree. This was maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, maybe even more. He went back to school and, like, finished that degree and started, like, doing it professionally again, yeah, yeah. You know, so having two jobs. But he always was the greatest, like, psychologist in sessions. He just makes everybody feel valued and comfortable, and they sort of lets everyone in the room, like, you know, that walking into a session, it's such a head trip, right?
Yep. You start getting
inside your own head and worrying about, like, if you'll be able to perform in that moment and all. He just has a way of putting everybody at ease. And if something's not working, he's so good at sussing that out, talking to the person in a way that doesn't make them feel threatened or like,
right.
They, you know,
right.
Like they're not meeting the challenge, but it's just a beautiful way of getting them to turn in a different direction.
Yeah.
Which will then result in something magical. He's so good.
Oh,
he's so great.
I love that, man, because it's such a, you're in such a fragile position that the position that you're in, you know, as a musician, especially like even early on, that like, if someone comes at you without any kind of empowerment, it's real hard not to react so defensively. It's unbelievable. Or at least it was for me.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I started working with people that like can come in and like, they come in and talk to you and they walk out and you're like, I got to do better. And you're like, wait a minute, you mean I fucked up that whole last take? You know what I mean? Like, they didn't make you feel like that when they were telling you, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a master at that. And I'm sure we'll hopefully make more records together in the future. And also that band that plays on that record is beautiful. I mean, it's Bill Frisell playing guitar along with David Polkingham. Like,
oh,
what
wow.
a combo.
Yeah.
Brandon Temple on drums.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Yes. And Victor Krause playing bass, who he's Allison's brother. He's worked with Bill quite a bit.
Wow.
He's amazing. Lives in Nashville. Very unusual, like playing on the upright, just his own style. Luke Jacobs, he's my husband.
Yes.
Well, we're actually not married officially. I call him my husband because whatever. Boyfriend sounds so lightweight.
It does. You guys have a kid, you live together, you work on a shitload of stuff together. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
do. Just my boyfriend.
Yeah,
I'm seeing this guy.
Yeah. Dating this guy. Yeah. So Luke helped, you know, he really helped me kind of get the bones of those songs together. He's very good at, he's a great rhythm guitar player. Like, truly, and I'm not just saying this because he's my husbandish boyfriend, whatever, but truly he's like, he's one of the greatest rhythm guitar players I've ever heard. And so we kind of formulated the songs together in our living room, made demos, and then so he's playing rhythm on that record. And then he came back and did pedal steel, lap steel stuff, later on.
And you guys do the From Texas with Love series together. So he's also a visual art guy.
He is. He does so many things. He is a videographer. Yes. Does graphic work. You know what? I mean, the thing that he does the best, I think, is he's really good at telling stories. Both, like, on stage, he's great at telling stories when we would go out and tour as a duo, but he's so good at it in film, like, you know, when he makes videos for people, whether it's a quick From Texas with Love, or it's, you know, like he just did a very short documentary type film about Mercury Charlie.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
Charlie the car guy. He's just so good at getting you from, you know, A to B, and drawing all the lines and telling a story in a compelling way, figuring out if that needs to do that, if that needs like voiceover, or if it's actually just editing really well to get Mercury Charlie to tell his story in a way that is compelling and drawing you in and leaving you like, well, and what happens next?
Yeah, yeah.
He's very gifted at that. So that's, I mean, it's a real asset to have in the family.
Definitely. Definitely.
Talent.
So as far as like putting out music, you put out Lola and this Americano, the musical is obviously your music, and it's not a Kerry Rodriguez album per se, but it is an album featuring Kerry Rodriguez with music by Kerry Rodriguez.
Yeah.
I don't know how to categorize it.
Yeah, it's strange.
Anymore.
It's not something I made much of a, you know, I didn't really make it very public, because it is, they are songs for a musical, and taken out of context. Yeah, I don't, you know, that's the thing about musical theater songs. You really do need to see them in context, or listen to them in context, I think, to get the most out of them, because we're telling like a specific story, and we're moving plot along with a song. So it's tricky. I have a feeling we'll end up making another recording as this thing progresses, and possibly with the cast, who knows?
You know. So you, like, if you play, you don't play any of these songs live?
The only one I have played is the song called The Dreamer, which is the song that ends act one. And it is the moment where Tony has just found out he's undocumented, and his parents lied to him and didn't tell him that he wasn't a citizen. So it's pretty easy to set that up in a live setting, you know, and tell enough of that story then to where I can sing it, and it feels powerful and like it makes sense within the context of my show.
So where are you at with like the next Kerry Rodriguez album? What is like in the cycle of releasing music, where are you?
Yeah. I mean, I love the
Broadway
idea
part of
it. No, I'm very far away. Honestly, I wonder if I'll make another record. I hope I do. It's taken so much creative energy to write the music for this musical. I mean, I've written probably 35 songs, right?
Yeah.
And they've been hard to write. I mean, some of these songs,
I can only imagine.
It's hard because you're not just like inspired by something and sitting down and writing a song. No, you have this very specific assignment, and you're writing for like four different people's voices and points of view, and it all has to come together and be musical. And so I feel like it just kind of zapped me of any creative songwriting energy I might have just for myself.
Wow.
That being said, it was a great exercise. I do think it hopefully made me a more nimble songwriter. Hopefully, like, it won't be as painstaking moving forward to write a song for me, because that was so painstaking that I think in comparison, anything I do in the future, hopefully will feel easier. So we'll see though. But then the other thing is, I don't know. I certainly am not in the place anymore in my career where I ever just write songs because I need to write songs to make an album, to get an album out into the world. Making an album takes so much resource and energy, and then you put it out, and the way it works now, boom, then it's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
What do you get for, and you can't even sell the thing, the physical thing, the money in your bank account. So it has been interesting just the last few years, and with the pandemic, you know, finding different ways to create and share music with people. I think the videos song, that I've made with Luke have been
the song
very
for
cool.
you. Things, mm-hmm. yeah, the yeah.
I liked doing those because it was just a way to share yeah. music, you know, yeah. like a moment in time, and anyone can watch it from anywhere in the world. You know, it's not like going out and playing a show where I only am sharing that music with the 100 people that can get in that tiny listening room.
Right. You know, so I feel like you've also set yourself up in a career where you can sort of like choose what you know what I mean? Like, I don't think you have to be like on the county fair circuit. You know what I mean? Yeah. You seem to be able to pick and choose your what you want to do. Speaking of which, I'm friends with Alex Marrero, who is just easily one of my favorite people of all time.
Yeah.
Laboratorio, he plays with you on that. And the next one you're doing is, it's going to be at the Stateside or at the Paramount?
At the Stateside.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's on May 22nd with Gabby Moreno and Oscar Casares.
Yeah. Oscar Casares. He is an author. Mm-hmm. He's a professor at UT, uh-huh. works a lot there with their Latino Studies Department. And yeah, he did a project called Postcards from the Border, where he and a photographer went down to the Texas-Mexico border and traveled the whole thing, like the from, you know, end of Texas to the other end of Texas along the border. And he wrote postcards about what they saw to his, at the time, 10-year-old daughter. And like the idea was just to give her a different snapshot and narrative of border life from what you read in newspapers.
Right.
Like
right.
to kind of give a much more human,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
view of the border. And so he composed these short postcards that go with beautiful photographs. The photographer's name is Joel Salcido, and we're going to have some of his images too at the show.
Awesome.
So I'll be sometime between now and then I'll be underscoring writing some music to go underneath these postcards, and also thinking about songs I can play. You know, we'll have Oscar read a postcard with a little, you know, simple music underneath, and then maybe a musical response where I sing a song or Gabby sings a song that,
right.
you know, correlates to the story that was just told, kind of thing. So
Gabby works with David a lot, right? Garza.
She does.
Yeah.
She's so talented.
That's just what he said. Yeah.
Very talented singer, great songwriter, great guitar player. She's a heavyweight. I'm very excited to be, and we're doing Laboratorio together. We're also doing a short little run. We're playing Houston and Dallas that week too, just to kind of make the most of her coming down from LA.
That's great.
So yeah, I'll really get to know her musically, which is exciting.
Yeah. What else do you have like coming up? Like what happens after that?
Yeah, I have some random tour dates in the summer shaping up, like festival. I'm playing a couple festival type things and
a new season of From Texas with Love. By the way,
yes,
that really is a beautiful, like, and also tell Luke, who I didn't meet that day, but he's really great. Like that.
Yeah.
It's put together really well.
Really
it's really beautiful. It sounds great. It looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that project is basically like two microphones, those big boom
yep.
microphones. You can see them in the video, which is fun to like have those shots where you see what we're doing. But he's like, yeah, we're just going out in the field with these two booms, and it's amazing the sound quality.
Yeah,
I mean, it sounds. I mean, you do hear, of course, ambient noise, whatever they
but
are,
but not too much. I mean, I was like, I was kind of surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now that you say that it's just the two microphones. What do you do when you started doing that? What were you, what, What were you hoping to get out of it?
Well, we were deep into the sort of isolation of pandemic life and really craving connection with, especially like with our musical friends,
right?
You know, just really missing playing music with other people. And, that was it was a safe way at the time to collaborate with another musician. Hey, let's just go out in a field, play some music.
Yeah.
And we didn't even know. We just like started. It was like, we have to do something. I don't know. It just started kind of formulating. And then after we did the first one, I remember that first one we recorded was with David Polkingham, and a dear friend for 20 plus years. And I just remember showing up. We used kind of my mom's, we used someone who had some land out off Cuernavaca, and we like pulled up to their house, and just, we hadn't seen anybody in months, and like getting out of the car and seeing David Polkingham, I almost just made us cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's at the point we were at, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think I didn't even realize, like, once we started playing those songs, it was August and it was so freaking hot. I mean, it was like 9 a.m. and already 95, one of those days, humid. But all that kind of faded into the background, and just that feeling of playing music with your friend outside.
Yeah.
I had forgotten how special it is like to play music outside just for the joy of it. Not because you're doing a outside festival gig and you're, all these other stuff. No, yeah. You're like just playing with a friend, one other human outside in nature, and like birds are chirping, and it's just, it is magical.
Yeah.
There's something so special.
It's like you're actually communing with nature in that way.
Yes.
Like you're speaking her language at that point.
Definitely. Yeah. And they interact. The one I did with Emily Gimbel, I remember finishing a song and the birds like just came right in as soon as we were done chirping. Like they were totally interacting with what we were doing.
Amazing.
And responding to it.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you have for this season? Can you divulge even just one person?
No.
Okay.
But you know why I can't divulge?
Because you got no one.
Because I haven't really figured it out yet. Working on that.
I got nothing, man.
It's hard to decide. Well, it's hard to choose. Like, especially if we're only doing, I think we're going to do 4 for the season. And there are so many people I'd love to work with. But it does take so much resource to make these things. And like for Luke, the editing thing, like it takes a long time. So it's hard to choose 4, and I have so many wonderful musical friends in our community and outside, you know.
You seem to have a connection to the guys behind us and the guys in front of you as well. Like you seem to have a good, you're not just in one world. You're like, you know what I mean?
I'm definitely working on that. And I think like Laboratorio has been a really great way of building my musical community for sure.
Yeah.
And meeting people from other areas of music that I wasn't familiar with. And, you know, like our last one, we had Ruben Ramos.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Tejano
yeah.
Ruben,
yeah.
Alongside with Susanna Schoffel and Jaime Ospina.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't get 3 more different artists. And they're all so talented and in what they do. And it was like, just really, really cool to find the threads that weave all of that together and learn from each one of them. That's my main goal with Laboratorio is just like, it's like I get to go to music school, you know, learn from musicians and have fun. And then we're forever family once we do one, you know?
That's what it feels like. I did it, not Laboratorio, but did Alex ever tell you about this weird song division thing? It's like a corporate songwriting thing. Where they use songwriting as a corporate team building tool.
Yeah.
We've done some of those together, but that's how I ended up becoming friends with them. But man, I was going to say, I'm really glad I met you at that concert for Joanna. And it's funny that, I mean, not for any reason, but, you know, people just kind of like, you know their name, you've seen them play, you're like, yeah, she's great. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. But then when you right. really like spend a day or two like digging in like completely into someone's music and life and their creative endeavors, and you're just really, really, really great. Like you really are. And it's a pleasure talking to you and getting to know you. And I hope that we stay friends after this.
That is, you are such a nerd. Yes, me too. Well, I mean, that's how it works, right? Yeah. Like what you're doing, you're building community, you're building, you know, with this project, with your podcast.
That's why I asked, because when I started my podcast, it was for a few different reasons, but really the main reason was I was getting older. And I was feeling like I was mad at everyone that was doing something. Like you open up the thing, you're like, why is that guy doing? That guy's terrible. Like what? You know what I mean?
Totally. Yes,
and
I do.
I knew people like that when I was younger, and I couldn't. I always said like I'm not gonna grow up and be a guy. It's like, why does that guy have a stupid drum machine? He's just an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, why don't I find out who that guy is and what he's doing, and probably find out that I probably really like them. So I realized that if I could.
That's beautiful.
Well, yeah.
I love it.
You don't want to be a guy whose other people's successes are personal attacks on you. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Yeah.
That's a great reason to do that. And yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's been great talking to you. You should go eat breakfast. I'm sure you have a big day in New York. When you sent me the thing and said that that's what you were working on and that's why you were in New York, I had that thing of like that small town grandma. We're like, we shouldn't be. I was going to write you and be like, well, you don't have to do this when you're in New York in the middle of all of this busy stuff. But I'm glad you wanted to do it. And I'm really glad that you followed up and that we got to talk. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Me too, Johnny. Yeah. This was a bright, bright moment in my day.
Good.
Now I'm going to go in a dark theater and
and tell people they're singing stuff too smiley.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, and enjoy your day, and good luck with everything, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Johnny.
All right.
Be well.
You too.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
Picture
Bye.
Frame.
Okay.
Y en el otro lado.
That's Carrie Rodriguez. You can find her at carrierodriguez.com. You can find out more about Americano the Musical by going to americanothemusical.com and go check out her laboratorio show with Gabby Moreno and Oscar Casares on May 22nd at Stateside Theater here in Austin, Texas. Great talking to Carrie. Get out there and check her out, carrierodriguez.com. Fantastic. And don't forget, when you're out there checking out Carrie Rodriguez, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is you find podcasts, be it Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find your podcast. You'll get new shows every Tuesday and every Friday. All right? Have a great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. Let's get down.
Give me a photograph that I can touch. I dreamed I was